How's it going, everybody? We're back with another edition of the Ad Podcast, coming to you live from Social Media World here in beautiful San Diego on a rainy day in February. Super day. We have a really cool show. It's always exciting to have a guest live and in person. So AJ Wilcox, sitting here to my left, is the founder of B2Linked, which is one of the only certified LinkedIn ads partners. He's run paid media campaigns on LinkedIn for five of the top 10 brands on LinkedIn. He's spoken on over 50 stages as a LinkedIn ads expert and has appeared on over 200 podcasts. So we are going to get into LinkedIn today, and this guy's got a wealth of information. So AJ, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
So stoked to be here.
Awesome. So AJ, first thing I'd just love to hear about is when I was doing the research on you today, you have an interesting background and what I would call kind of a phoenix from the ashes story on how you actually started your agency. So we were talking a little bit pre-show that sometimes the best thing that can happen to you is you can get laid off from a job. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your early experience and how did you discover LinkedIn and fall in love with it from a paid perspective?
Yeah, so this is so interesting. If you would have asked me, you know, 15 years ago, you think you're ever going to become a LinkedIn ads expert? Absolutely not. It was never in the cards.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is I was an SEO and a Google Ads guy early on and really enjoyed those platforms. Actually, Google Ads is kind of tedious, but I did it because SEO is all about the keyword, being able to track people by intent and then give them what they want. But when you do SEO, it can take like 3 to 6 months to see your results. But with Google Ads, I could target a keyword, show an ad, and then I would know.
Instant gratification.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with advertising at that point. Like, I'm a data guy. I love the data. So I went, fast forward lots of years, I went to go be the first digital marketing hire for a pre-IPO SaaS company.
Nice.
And there, I remember on my very first day, I'm talking to my new boss, the CMO, and she asked me what my strategies were going to be for my channels. And I laid out what it was going to be for SEO, for Google Ads, for display. It was a little early for Facebook, but I had kind of ideas in mind.
Yep.
And I remember her saying, "Oh, all that sounds great. Go ahead and execute it. But just so you know, we started a pilot with LinkedIn Ads 2 weeks ago. See what you can do."
Okay.
And I saluted and said, "Yes, ma'am." Jumped into the platform. I took all my same strategies from Google Ads and applied them to LinkedIn. And I didn't want to look stupid to my new boss. So I dove in.
You figured it out.
Yeah. And within 2 weeks, my sales team came up to me and said, "Hey, AJ, we don't know what you're doing over here, but we're fighting over your leads. Keep it up."
Wow. So you saw that kind of results from the channel day one.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Super early. And this was back when LinkedIn ads were just these text ads.
Super basic.
Yeah. You're paying like $2 a click, but that was still expensive compared to Google that was 50 cents.
Yeah.
And Facebook that was like a third of a cent.
I love it. So I've experimented with LinkedIn ads. We've bought a fair amount of them at my agency to actually drive traffic for us as an agency. And that's a question I want to get in with you later on in the show. But one of the trickiest things I ever did is I took a promo clip from my podcast, which was with the chief revenue officer of Twitch.
Yeah.
And I promoted it just to people who worked at Twitch. And it actually had a great impact. It had more engagement than I've ever had on a LinkedIn ad because it was so hyper-relevant to that particular company. And I was still able to get scale on the buy by just targeting people that lived at Twitch. But LinkedIn ads to clients, what you've already alluded to, everybody always goes back to this idea that they're expensive and I can get more bang for my buck on Facebook or Google. What do you say to those naysayers that say LinkedIn ads are too expensive?
Yeah, I definitely agree sometimes. Mm-hmm. But here's what we see generally. LinkedIn is usually pitted against Meta, so especially Facebook ads. And so the average cost per click on Facebook ads might be $3 to $5. On LinkedIn in North America, it's 10 to 16. So immediately a CMO is going to look at it and say, LinkedIn is three times the cost. What should we do with this? And what we've found, because in B2B, we track everything in CRMs, and so we can do this really complex reporting. What we find is, yes, LinkedIn's clicks are three times more expensive, but the sales team doesn't have to throw out or disqualify any leads. because you chose exactly the right people in your audience that you wanted to go after. And so you're giving the sales team exactly what they want.
Yeah.
Whereas with
no spillage.
Facebook, exactly. Yeah. With Facebook, yeah, you're going to pay, you know, $3 to $5 per click, but your sales team has to throw out 90% of those leads because mm-hmm. Facebook doesn't know who you are professionally.
Yeah.
And so when you actually start getting down into the cost per sales qualified lead, cost per proposal sent, cost per deal closed, LinkedIn is oftentimes twice as profitable as Meta, even though it's, you know, three times the cost up front.
Wow. Wow. I love that. Have you ever done any cross-channel targeting? Like, one of the things that I've thought about is, you know, LinkedIn, you literally get people's personal email addresses, yeah. right? Versus their professionals. Because most people include their personal email address in case they change jobs or in case they get headhunted. So when you connect with somebody on LinkedIn, theoretically, you've got their personal email, not just their work email. Then you can take those and import those into Google for an audience. You can maybe put those into Meta. Do you ever do any cross-channel targeting and target those same people in other places?
Yep, exactly like you shared.
Wow.
When you're taking an organic profile, you can export the list of people that you're connected to, and then you can do stuff with advertising that way. You can get their personal email addresses. It's not, you can't do an export anymore because mm-hmm.
You could at one point?
Yeah, at one point you could.
Wow.
Now it's all manual.
Oh, man.
Some people are probably scraping. But,
yeah, yeah.
I'm a LinkedIn partner. I can't.
Yeah, you got to be on the up and up and do everything, you know, the way that it's supposed to be done through the platform. Got it.
But our clients, most of the time, I would say almost without exception, the sales team wants a work email address. So if we're generating leads, we're going to require this has to be your work email.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, work email is not what people sign up for Google, usually not LinkedIn or other platforms. And so what you can do is do like a data augmentation, what do you call that? Anyway, there's a whole bunch of different platforms.
Yeah, data matching, enriching.
Enriching, mm-hmm. that's the word I was looking for. And so you can run it through and say, hey, I have this person's professional. And they'll be like, oh, here's their cell phone number. Here's their personal email. And then you can take that to other platforms.
Wow.
I also love to leverage other platforms with just the traffic that I'm driving from LinkedIn.
Mm.
So I know if I'm paying for traffic, these are going to be exactly the right titles, the right size companies. There are ideal buyers. Then what I can do is I can go to my Google and I can go to my Meta and say, retarget all of my traffic that comes with UTM source equals LinkedIn
mm-hmm.
in it, treat them differently and show specific ads to them. And yeah, all kinds of different ways that these different channels can hold hands and sync.
I love that. I love that. And I was actually watching an interview you did today. Well, you didn't do the interview today, but I was watching it today. You were recently on Experian's B2B podcast for their small business segment. And you were talking with the host about one of your favorite formats is actually the text banner.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit why is that such a powerful unit, and maybe it doesn't generate a lot of traffic, but it generates results in the other formats?
Yeah. So, I kind of alluded to this ad format before, where this was the first ad format LinkedIn had.
Yep.
It's over in the right rail only when you're on desktop,
mm-hmm.
and probably 80% of users are using mobile anyway. So you don't have access to very many of the members. They have really low click-through rates. It's like 0.025% click-through rate, meaning every 10,000 times you show this ad, it gets clicked 2.5 times.
Wow.
So it rarely gets seen by, you know, members rarely see it, and then they rarely click it. And so your question becomes like, AJ, why is this one of your favorite formats? This is why. It's the cheapest ad format on LinkedIn. You can pay all the way down to $2 a click still, while all your other clicks are going to be like $10 to $16. This one's $2.
So you can get way more scale.
Yeah. And it shows up like every single time someone refreshes the page.
Yeah.
So you can imagine.
So it reinforces brand awareness more than other formats.
Yeah. And in fact, we've actually quantified this. We found that when we were running text ads alongside sponsored content, our click-through rates, our engagement rates on the sponsored content increased by 13%.
Wow.
Just because they'd seen the brand before and someone's going like, oh, I've heard of this brand before. They must be legit. I'll pay attention.
So that aided awareness is up to 13% across other formats. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty powerful.
And it costs next to nothing because it's the cheapest ad format, rarely gets clicked on, but shows free a bunch of times.
I love it. I love it. So another thing that you were talking about with on the Experian podcast is the power of video. And my CEO is very much of the opinion that this is the year of video on LinkedIn. Not just in ads, but the professionals are going to be posting more video in their personal accounts as well. People are going to start talking. And I thought that you had mentioned something really powerful about that. You mentioned that that it's important for people to basically, like, I'm gonna paraphrase what you said. You basically said, people might download 5 white papers from my company and still not trust me.
Yeah.
But video tells them who I am, and they get an opportunity to get to know me through video, and then they start to build a virtual relationship and they start to build trust. Why is LinkedIn video so powerful, both organically and in paid?
Yeah, I think video, like you alluded to, it's the most powerful format for getting people to know, like, and trust you. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, in a business-to-business buying journey, you generally have a long sales cycle and you have a high cost of purchase. And so all of those things add friction. And so you're not going to land a customer unless they know, like, and trust you. So how many blog posts of mine do you have to read before you're like, oh, I like this guy, I trust him? Probably a lot. The written word doesn't communicate emotion that same way.
Mm-hmm.
But you listen to me for 30 seconds on a video ad, and then another one shows up in your newsfeed, and you watch 20 more seconds of that. You might already be like, oh, this guy gives me helpful advice on my LinkedIn ads. That's cool. Like, I want to follow him now. And I think like your boss says, absolutely. I think video is going to be so key this year.
I love that.
Really well.
And like you said, like, I've never met you in person until a few minutes ago when we met in the lobby of Social Media World. But I do feel like I watched 2 videos. I've watched the initial video that I discovered you in, which was the hot sauce B2B marketing show that we were talking about.
If you want to see me cry.
Yeah, you should definitely check this out. I'm trying to remember the name. Do you remember the name of the podcast? Marketing on Mars. So check that out. It's the episode that he did with the woman who is the chief marketing officer of Percent, along with the host of the show. And they eat hot sauce when they can't answer questions. And what I love about that is it was the first business podcast that I've ever seen that actually tried to use humor. And I remember it, and I remembered AJ because of it so vividly. And I continue to talk to everybody I meet about this podcast. It's like it's burned into my cerebellum. But I mean, look, that's probably what gave me the interest in wanting to book you on my show, because I saw you in a video format. So coming back to video, should we, as marketers for our LinkedIn video, should we be thinking about hi-fi on production, or should we be thinking about, like, TikTok style, show everybody the behind the scenes of our lives as professionals, the making of our companies? Like, what should the creative look like? And I know that's a very generic question, but should we be thinking lo-fi or hi-fi for production?
Good question. So I attended Inbound this year in Boston, and one of the best presentations I've ever watched was by Chris, I forget his last name, at Wistia. And what he said was, he's a video producer. This is what he does for a living. He does really high value production. And his whole talk was, here's why you shouldn't hire me. And it was, when you have success with lo-fi video, like, you shoot with your phone, you edit with a $12 a month tool, you get a $30 mic from Amazon so your sound sounds a little bit better.
Yep.
When you've had success with those elements, that's when you can go, great, this is worth continuing to invest in. But I've seen brands who are like, oh, we're going to go drop $80,000 on a big shoot. And if the strategy for that video doesn't work, then they just wasted $80,000.
Wow, I love that.
Nothing's going to save it. But yeah, test out on the cheaper stuff, and I promise you, your video strategy is going to go a lot further. And then by the time you're ready to invest, you'll know what works.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, look at this podcast right now. I've got a Yeti mic that I bought in Toronto when I forgot my other one when I had an interview scheduled with the CMO of Shopify, and I had to get a new mic. Over there, the camera that I'm shooting on is my wife's EOS Rebel that's a hand-me-down because she got a better camera. And then I'm producing this whole show on my MacBook Pro. And I think, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to be Joe Rogan yet. I want a show that allows people to connect with my guests and allows them to connect with me. And then as it proves out value and ROI, and I know that I'm on strategy, then I'll start investing in a real studio and more production equipment and kind of punching up the value of it. But I love
it. And it's a deep hole you can put yourself down. Like, your lighting has to be perfect and you have to have lights everywhere, and then you're traveling with it. Yeah, much easier to start out simple, prove out the strategy, then scale.
I love it. All right, so I want to switch gears a little bit and I want to ask you, what's in the water in Utah? So, you know, there's been some really amazing companies that have come out of Utah in the marketing space. You've got Your Shop. We talked a little bit about my friend Sean Duras before the show, who's not only an amazing creator in his own right, but he's also got his daughter A for Adley's channel. He's got Space Station Gaming. He's got Space Station Integrations. We have the Ben Group. We've got Zephyr. Like, it seems like there's just all this amazing digital talent, whether it's on the agency side. You got Travis Chambers of Chamber Media. I mean, what is going on in Utah? Why are there so many just like rock star people coming out of Utah?
I've asked the same thing myself. I think what really helped in the digital marketing side of things, we had Omniture started there, which became Adobe Analytics. And so you have all of these like data and analytics people growing there. At the same time, we also had orangesoda.com and SEO.com competing for kind of SEO and Google Ads.
Wow.
And so most of the people I know that are kind of at my level, I remember working either with at Orange Soda or kind of competing against at SEO.com.
Crazy.
And I think it was just those companies, even though like most of them aren't really around anymore, it started the line of thought.
Yep.
And of course, I think we all fell in love with digital marketing and then went all of our separate ways into different companies.
So cool.
Agencies in-house, all that.
I love that. And also, I have a thesis that like Aurabrush was early in Utah too. And if you look at Aurabrush, that's where like Devin Supertramp came from. Like a lot of people who are interns. And I think Aurabrush was the first company to crack YouTube as a DR marketing platform. Harmer Brothers. Okay. Yeah. And I forgot about those guys. And that's like a whole nother story. Yeah. The most successful independent filmmakers probably in the business right now are out of, you know, Provo, Utah, which is pretty wild. So, you know, I also noticed on your LinkedIn, you did your mission in Ukraine.
I did. Yeah.
So what is that like now, like reflecting back on your time in Ukraine? Like, do you have friends there that have been impacted by this stuff? Wow.
It breaks my heart. I follow every piece of news I can hear about
man.
War. Most of my friends, because I served on the west or the eastern half, and I spoke Russian there.
Wow. They
were the ones that Russia came in. So pretty much all of my friends I'm still in contact with either fled to
they made
the
it out.
West or got out. But yeah, it totally breaks my heart. Ugh. I went back about 5 years ago because I had a speaking engagement.
Before all that stuff went down. Yeah.
And there was still like
tension,
turmoil. There were some places I couldn't go to, but I went and visited friends and they were all like, they hated Russia and they're like, okay, we don't speak Russian anymore. We speak Ukrainian. And they changed the names of all the streets to like Ukrainian generals. And I didn't understand anything anymore. So
yeah, I know it's sad. I mean, I, my only experience was, I went to Cannes the first year after COVID let it come back. And Cannes did a really cool thing that year. They actually, any Ukrainian marketer that wanted to come to Cannes got their fees waived.
Cool.
So there was a ton of Ukrainians there. And this one woman was, she lived in Kiev. She worked for like Ralph Lauren and she had to flee to Dubai. But she was there at Cannes, like enjoying the conference. And it was just really like visceral to like actually sit down with a human being who had actually been displaced like from our industry, like telling me the story of like, here's how I left in the early days and I made it to my sister who lives in Dubai. And now I'm kind of like in this weird purgatory situation where I'm in Dubai, but it made it all hit home for me, like actually meeting someone and like spending time with them.
Yeah. You can see pictures on the news of like, here's an apartment building that got bombed, but when it's my friends sending me pictures of their neighborhood.
That's different. Yeah.
Totally changes things. Yeah. They're real
wild.
People.
Yeah. Well, cool that you got to have that experience at least and at least have that connection. So, all right. The next part of the interview, I want to dive into my side of the business, which is essentially the influencer marketing world.
Yeah.
So my shop, we fell into B2B. It was never what we intended to do. We went out there and we, you know, did travel and automotive and entertainment and gaming and beauty and all the things that you would expect an influencer agency to do 8 years ago when we started. But year two, we landed Adobe and Adobe became our biggest client for 7 years running. And it was exciting because yes, Adobe does, you know, big B2C type things like with Casey Neistat or they'll do stuff with Billie Eilish or Imagine Dragons. Like, they do big kind of YouTuber-centric, TikToker-centric campaigns that are meant to get one person to essentially buy one subscription of Creative Cloud or like make a brand halo. But what was also exciting was working with the B2B team, you know, taking influencers that were very niche to the Adobe product to conferences that were very inside baseball, like National Association of Broadcasters in Vegas, or going with them to International Broadcasters Conference in the Netherlands, and really like getting into the B2B side. So this is the year that we as an agency are going all in on B2B, with a primary focus on LinkedIn being the main place where we recruit influencers to create content with brands. I think we're early because I think we're basically at a crossroads where 10% of B2B marketers get it, but they're probably doing it at house because they're early adopters. Then you've got 80% that are like, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about. And then you got 10% that need agency support, like our client Zendesk, that knows it's important but doesn't know how to do it. So I'm just curious on your take. Do you agree with me that this is the year of like B2B influencer marketing, specifically on LinkedIn?
Yeah, I think if you would have asked me last year, I would have said, oh, I don't think influencer marketing is going to be a thing on LinkedIn. Because you go to someone with like, hey, I'll pay you $500 to promote this thing.
Yep.
And they're going to be like, I have a full-time job. I make a lot of money. Why would I? This year, like just this year, I've seen a lot more of this where it's not just the stodgy VP at a, you know, a Fortune 500 company who's being approached. It's anyone can be an influencer on LinkedIn. And you have to be passionate about your business, your craft, your industry, and share things that are helpful and thoughtful. And yeah, I really do. I think this is the year. I've already seen signs of it.
I love it. Now, how this ties in specifically to the paid side, LinkedIn launched a new ad format this year called Thought Leadership.
Yeah.
Now, what I think is interesting is technically you have to work at the company, right, to be able to use it. So if I wanted to hack it, could I hire my influencer as an evangelist and have them put in their title influencer for company X, and then I could use their creative?
Absolutely.
There we go. Okay.
But you won't have to do that for very long.
Wow.
I think here in the next quarter or two, LinkedIn's going to release the ability for us to promote posts from a non-employee.
Wow.
So then we're going to have like the ability to do user-generated content. And I think that changes the game for anything influencer.
That's crazy. So have you had some early results against the Thought Leader ad? Does it perform better or worse than the other formats?
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm actually really, really excited about Thought Leader ads. We've run them for clients. We've run them for ourselves. Here's generally what we see. You put something in the newsfeed that has your company's logo and it's an ad, and you're going to pay $10 to $16 a click, and then you'll have roughly 0.5% of the people who see that will end up taking some sort of action on it. And that's why we pay $10 to $16 a click, is because when you have such a low engagement rate, that's what you have to pay LinkedIn to show your ad.
Sure.
Sometimes it's even higher than that. But with these Thought Leader ads, they don't show up as a company in your newsfeed, which companies, like, we don't
buy from companies, we buy from people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so now you've got, like, Dylan, your post shows up in my newsfeed, and I may not already know you, but, like, there's a reason for you to show up in my newsfeed, and there's a face.
Yeah.
There's a face of someone that if I comment, I'm going to expect a comment back, but you don't with a company. And so we see click-through rates that are like 5 or 6 times higher than companies.
Wow.
And that brings the costs down. So we're seeing an average cost per click of like $1 to $3 rather than $10 to $16. And they're just more effective.
That's great.
People will interact with them. So I'm huge on
that. What's the time horizon for that decoupling of needing to work at a company? Do you know yet?
I don't know.
Okay. It's coming though. It's on the product roadmap.
Yeah. Okay. When I talked to them, they said that it should be in beta soon. Mm-hmm. And sometimes their betas will last for like 1 month. Sometimes they're like a whole quarter, sometimes even longer. So if they built it right, hopefully it's like in a month or two.
Do you think LinkedIn's going to try and get in on the influencer game, or are they just going to allow that to be kind of third party Wild West like all the other platforms?
I could see them trying to impose regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're
a little bit more closed than your average social network.
They're
like, we just got an ads API last week, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they're tight on privacy, and they also wait for Facebook to do something successfully for 4 years before they build themselves.
Nice.
So, yeah, I would hope that it's a little bit more Wild Wild West, but I could see them clamping down.
What are you seeing as far as the early access to this new ads API? Are you guys playing with it? Anything exciting to report yet?
Yeah, the exciting thing that I have to report is I've tried to implement it for ourselves with Google Tag Manager because I'm relatively technical. Like I want to set that up myself and understand how it works. And I tried to follow LinkedIn's documentation and I couldn't. I hit brick walls.
So you need like dev level help to get that thing to work.
Yeah. So I'm giving that feedback to LinkedIn. So I'm going to be creating a guide. That's like, if you want to do Google Tag Manager reporting to LinkedIn and telling it when you had a conversion and it's more accurate than just like firing the pixel, then hopefully I'll have a guide here in the next
couple months. Okay, we'll be on the lookout for that. So I also wanted to ask you, you know, we as an agency, we've run a decent amount of LinkedIn ads, and I'm sure we never did it right. I remember my boss woke up one morning, she's like, oh crap, I like overspent and all this stuff. And I think in an interview, you were also talking about the idea that LinkedIn's default settings are like whack right out of the gate. Like it's like five things that actually works against the advertiser. Yep. Why do you think they do that? And why not just fix it?
Honestly, I think they're okay with gouging people. Any LinkedIn employee you talk to, they don't seem like they're trying to get your wallet as fast as they can and run. But the company, all of their policies tend to be like that. Mm. They're always more expensive. They don't work as hard at providing value. There's a lot you have to do yourself. So that's why I have so many people come to us and say,
because it's not easy.
Yeah. We don't want to run it ourselves because we've made mistakes. Yep. We want someone who already knows how to do this. Yeah. So why? I think they make more money doing
that. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like contextual based ad targeting, right? Like Google doesn't make money not monetizing half their platform that is dog on a skateboard video. So, you know, whenever you have an advertiser, they want targeting to be broad because they want to monetize, you know, as much of the network as possible versus marketers like us, whether it's contextual targeting on YouTube or whether, you know, company and title-based targeting, like marketers seem to want to tighten it up, but still get scale. But platforms want you to advertise broadly. And it seems like that's just kind of a constant yin and yang that we're going to have to deal with.
Yep. And I wish I could see their churn numbers for every new account that starts without someone helping, how quickly they leave the platform. But they are seeing growth. I mean, just in the last couple of years, I bet they've doubled or tripled their total number of advertisers and total ad spend on the platform. So whatever they're doing, it's working. But boy, I know the things, like the dials to turn and everything to keep costs low, because LinkedIn does kind of gouge you
if you're not paying attention. Well, that makes sense. All right. So do you buy LinkedIn ads as an agency to drive your own pipeline?
We do.
Nice.
Yeah, if you would have asked me 2 years ago, I would have said, no, we're 100% inbound, even though we're a LinkedIn ads agency.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because when you advertise as an agency, your performance is so different than when you advertise for someone else.
Mm.
So for our clients, quite frankly, it's really easy for us to advertise for our clients. We know what works, but the second you're an agency, all of the game changes.
Mm.
If I have to hypothesize, I would say the reason why is like you could spit into the wind and hit an ad agency.
Right, there's just so many to choose from.
Yeah. And that takes up space in people's minds and they don't wanna get to know a new agency, which is a really important reason to.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, we're getting down to the final stretch here. So what are you most excited about over, say, the next 6 months to 6 months to a year on what's coming down the pipeline for your agency as a thought leader evangelizing paid strategies on LinkedIn?
I'm really excited about the new thought leader ad. So most people haven't used them yet. They just came out in June. So being able to sponsor posts from someone who's not a current employee, I think it's going to be game changer there. I'm also really excited about the conversions API. I feel like where cookies are going away, or at least third-party cookies, like all of our tracking is going to be modeled at some point, or not all of it, but a good portion where we didn't actually track it. And so the platforms have to say, we think this is what would have happened if you could have tracked everything. And so conversions API fixes that.
Wow.
So I am excited about that. Finally, LinkedIn has it. I've been watching Facebook and Google for years. Finally, we get that.
Well, LinkedIn, if you're listening, continue to open up access to the platform. Most importantly, guys like me need an API access so we can find creators on LinkedIn without hunting through the what people say and doing it the old-fashioned way, or emailing our friends at LinkedIn that happen to manage the LinkedIn Top Influencer program. But hey, we'll do what we got to do to make it successful for now. All right, AJ, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. Such a pleasure to meet you in person. You're a host of information. Anything you want to plug? Where can people find you if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, obviously you're probably a podcast listener if you're listening to this. I host the LinkedIn Ads Show podcast. So if you're wanting to get really geeky on LinkedIn ads, tune in. It's a great show.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to subscribe and tune in. I can't wait to learn more about the platform and learn more from AJ. So, all right, everybody, if you're at home and you enjoyed this podcast today, don't forget to subscribe or follow us wherever you happen to be listening or watching today. If you enjoyed the show, if you give us a review, that helps us find a wider audience. And last but not least, if there's somebody in your network on LinkedIn that you think would benefit from the conversation that I had with AJ today, don't forget to share the show. We'll see you next time.